Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday, happy New Year, and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio, the show with a particular focus on those individuals and organizations doing an exceptional job of identifying, attracting, developing, and retaining high potential talent. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all those who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. So today we introduce someone who personifies leadership, and he has a pretty impressive resume to boot. So we will welcome today Jeremy Kubitschek. Jeremy Kubitschek is the president and CEO of Giant Impact and the co-founder of the Giant Companies, or family of companies, and he's an entrepreneur and a published author whose current book is a national bestseller. So Jeremy is passionate about helping leaders grow so they can serve others, and his drive is to liberate and awaken leaders, and that's evident in the work of Giant with the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast and Leader Tours, as well as in the Catalyst Movement. And we're going to talk a little bit more about those two efforts and have a good time talking about that as well. So today the Giant Companies include Giant Partners, Giant Capital, and Giant Experiences. And with offices in Atlanta and Oklahoma City, Giant is really focused on helping tens of thousands of leaders around the world. So Jeremy and his wife Kelly have three kids, and they live in Johns Creek, Georgia. He enjoys, obviously, writing as being an author, connecting with leaders, and creating programs that influence leaders. So first, Jeremy, I want to thank you for joining us, and welcome to Global Leader Radio.
Oh, thank you. So excited to be here with you and looking forward to sharing and just being a part of this.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And, well, I did say it to the audience, but I want to tell you as well, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Yeah, you as well.
So how are you today?
I'm doing great. Honestly, I woke up today. And the tweet that I tweeted was live, you know, live today. How can you shake off any dust and get fired up? Because you got a chance to really refresh and reboot, and that's what I really love about the New Year season.
Yeah, it gives you a chance to start and freshen up and focus on something brand new. So tell us a little bit about Jeremy Kubitschek. Now, as far as I understand, you are a Fulton County or Alpharetta native, right?
No. I'm actually a farm boy from Oklahoma. And the quick story, my last name is kind of hard. Lots of people butcher it, but it's Kubitschek, right?
Kubitschek.
People always go, so that's Polish, right? No. It's Czech. It's
Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia.
So my family moved from Prague, Czechoslovakia, all the way to Prague, Oklahoma. So I'd moved from a Czech community to a Czech community, and so I grew up in that community, and I grew up in a farm atmosphere, and I'm an extrovert. So an extrovert on a tractor is not real helpful, and so eventually I had these aspirations and dreams that were bigger than the farm, and those took me to a number of places. And I grew up in Oklahoma, went to school in Oklahoma, and then moved to Moscow, Russia in the early 90s.
Really? Yeah, I did see that in your bio. So, and at 21, it appears that you co-founded a company in Russia.
I did. We started a company called Global Options, and it was a great idea. It was right after the walls had come down. The communism had ceased, and Soviet Union transformed into Russia. We were one of the first groups in, and we started an economic school, which is now the largest private school in Moscow, called the Moscow Economic School. We started a marketing company and an accounting training business and sold those in the mid-90s. So fun experience and a great team of partners that I was with.
So since then, you've been an executive in a large merchandising business.
That's right. Yep. I got to work for some great companies and great people, and got to see inside of a lot of different companies around. We work with the Walmarts and Krogers and Target and all types of companies, and got to see commerce and people and leadership and good and bad.
Very interesting. So is there some significance to the name Giant, especially in the way it's spelled, you know, with the small I?
Yeah, it's capital G, small I, capital A-N-T. My partner and I built the companies 10 years ago, and we had this vision of we really wanted to serve people. We just thought, you know, how do we help people grow their business, but do it in a humble way? Okay. So the concept of Giant is really you can do great things and be humble. You can do great things without having to brag and trying to be the traditional, you know, Mark Cuban, Donald Trump type of business people. And so the whole idea is bringing humility into the growth. And we always say that we help people grow, help them grow personally, help their teams grow, help their organizations grow in the right way for the right reasons. Mm. And it's the right way and right reasons part that is real significant. And most people don't know how to combine those with just the desire to grow.
Okay.
So that's what we've been able to do.
We're going to touch on that a little bit more. I'm pulling that thread. So that, hence the small I. That's the humility piece?
That's right.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So when you say Giant, Giant is tens of thousands of leaders around the world. Can you help us to better understand the Giant model or business model?
Yeah. The business model, well, we've got a number of companies. So we've created those because each one of them have their own focus. So Giant Partners is focused on CEOs primarily around strategy and growth, revenue growth and strategic direction.
Okay.
Giant Capital is working to fund people who we believe in and helping people with the capital side. Giant Impact is our business that's focused on leadership. We believe there's really three ways to grow a business. I mean, there's three core components. There's the strategy, there's the people, and there's the capital.
Right.
Most people have not put all three of those together.
And it's tough to make it work without all three, right?
Exactly. A lot of people have a good strategy, and they may have the people, but they don't have any money.
Yeah.
And a lot of people may have some funding, but they don't really have the people. So on and on and on. So to put all three together, we just created companies around all three of them.
Ah, okay. So
Sorry, the Giant Impact world. To help people, especially in Atlanta, they'll know those by other brands that aren't called Giant. So the Catalyst movement is a leadership movement under 35-year-olds primarily. We'll do large events. So we'll do about 9 conferences around the country from 3,000 people to 13,000 people. The Chick-fil-A Leader Cast, on the other hand, it's a large event. We partner with Chick-fil-A. They're a great they embody the culture and the leadership because everyone who knows Chick-fil-A knows how good of a company they are culturally and from a leadership perspective. So we basically partnered with them on a national program that we had called the LeaderCast. And the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast is really simply a one-day event in May 10th. But the unique part about it is we allow people to partner with us around the country. Mm-hmm. So people who believe in the same style of influence and the same DNA that we have, they can partner with us in any country, in any city. They host the event themselves. They broadcast and simulcast the event that have speakers like Condoleezza Rice, Jack Welch, Coach Krzyzewski, John Maxwell's, you know, Henry Clouds, great speakers.
True giants.
I mean, and
in leadership.
And then we create an experience that's not just talking heads. When people see the simulcast, and if anyone's been to it, they know it's an experience. It's almost like a TV show.
Right.
It's humor. It's laughing. It's inspiration. And it's leadership. And what we do is we allow people then to host it anywhere in the country.
Hmm.
And then they sell tickets and they earn money. So it's an entrepreneurial venture. They make money on our events. So to fund whatever initiatives they have. So that's our model.
And it's pretty interesting. In that way, you help to drive kind of the understanding and the model of leadership for tens of thousands and maybe even millions of people, because you probably can't even keep up with all the numbers of people that the hosts bring in, correct?
That's right. Well, we typically have about 140,000 people that will be at the event.
Okay.
But we give them content to influence their teams. So it's millions of people that receive the content and the resources.
What a great ripple effect. So how did the idea to begin the Giant companies come about? Did you see or perhaps even sense a gap in the market that needed to be filled?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's based on, I talked about humility. It was really with, one of them was with me, an issue I had called pride. I don't know if you've ever heard of pride before, but I had an issue with it because I had this desire. I was very ambitious, young, 20-something. Obviously, moving to Russia, I had started some other dot-coms that we didn't talk about, and I wanted to be this guy who I wanted to be on Fast Company magazine. That was my goal in life, to be on the cover of Fast Company.
And like, I love Fast Company.
Like, that's a big deal. But anyway, that's kind of funny. So I had this ambitious streak in me. And so what happened in my when I was 31 years old, 10 years ago, I basically got to a place where we're starting Giant. And we were really starting Giant to do big things. And the little I didn't come in.
Okay.
Actually, when we started it first. Until I went and had an accident in Mexico in a hurricane. And that story, my wife and I went to have some time together before the startup, before we started Giant. And in the process, we got stuck in Mexico by a hurricane. And on the way back from a movie to our hotel room, we got hit by a drunk driver. And I had a life-changing experience with me. I got to see my life flash before my eyes. So I'm one of those guys who actually got to see life, you know, the guidepost magazines you read about.
Yeah,
I'm the one of those guys that got to see it, and I got to actually see almost like a movie. And what I wasn't thinking about was Fast Company.
Right.
I was thinking about my wife. I was thinking about my kids. I was thinking about God, but I wasn't thinking about business or dot-coms or Fast Company. And other. So what happened to me in that moment, that's when the switch happened with Giant. I came back and was rehabilitated. I had broken my entire rib cage, and I had severed intestines, and I mean everything.
Wow.
It was just horrendous. And having to rehabilitate and get back into normal flow of life again, my perspective changed. And what it did is it gave me a view that says, you know what, relationships are more important than opportunities. And opportunities come and go, relationships don't. Mm-hmm. So I've just started changing my lifestyle and changing the way I think and talk and speak and spend time with people, that relationships are vital and crucial. So pour into them. And so Giant actually changed from a big I to a little I after that experience.
Ah, so the I was the you.
The I changed.
Got it.
The I used to be really big, and we just shortened it.
So. And that is fantastic. So how long did this rehab take?
It was a good, you know, I'd say 4 to 6 months of
wow.
And just getting back to normal with no pain and so forth. But I think the personal rehab, the leadership rehab, is probably taken the last 10 years.
Interesting.
And so,
so you're still pain-free today?
Yeah. I'm pain-free and fine. I have, you know, an old man hip and a messed up sternum, but other than that, I'm good.
And you look great too.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Other than the hair, I think I lost hair in the taxi cab.
So during my research, Jeremy, I noticed that that you named three giant values: character, competence, and influence. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that there was character equals competence equals and influence equals. I mm-hmm. won't give it away. I'll let you kind of tell us a little bit about why those particular values are so important to the vision and mission of Giant.
Yeah, well, in our world, if you're not willing to influence people, impact people, then you're not a teammate. You just can't play in the Giant world if you're not willing to go across a certain line. One of my business partners, early on, we were talking about it. I first mentioned this to him. I said, you know, you did a great job in the meeting. They thought you were unbelievably competent, but you left influence on the table. They wanted – most people don't leave money on the table, but they will leave influence on the table because they feel like I'm not supposed to go that far or deep. My world is no – actually, my job is to influence and impact people, to be memorable and significant in someone's life.
Okay.
So our values are actually a model. They're the influence model. It's character leads to trustworthiness, mm-hmm. and character is really the ability to trust people, which is more important than just being trustworthy. I find that if no one is willing to trust other people, they're really not trustworthy.
Yeah.
So it's a trust factor. The second is competency, which is really not what you know, it's how relevant you are. Hmm. Smart people can tend to be know-it-alls. So we're looking at people who are smart but are practical and can become relevant. Hmm. So they become credible. So if you have competency, you have credibility. Well, everyone's looking for good, smart, credible people,
right,
that are trustworthy. But we said there's another level. And there's something, you know, called influence, and influence always leads to impact. And when you impact someone, which if you think of a meteor hitting the earth,
that's right.
There's a you know there's you can see it. You can see the impact.
Absolutely.
There's a crater. So to being memorable and significant in someone's life, that means they don't forget you. You truly had impact. So in our business, when we're talking about changing behavior, humility, we're talking about leadership, you have to be willing to impact people. So character, competence, and influence. What we state, though, and this is something I've written about in Leadership is Dead and other places, and I spent a lot of time on this, there's a big wall that usually is in between the character and competence and influence. And the wall is what most people have the hardest time coming breaking through, and that's called self-preservation. And self-preservation is where if I want to make a good impression on you, Alvin, then I want to be careful what words I say. I don't want you to think that I'm too pushy.
Almost like an extended honeymoon period.
Yeah, yeah. All right,
especially in teams.
So therefore, I don't want to be fully me. So I'm masking. I'm faking. Because I'm afraid you'll think I'm something else than I really am.
Yeah.
That's fear, and that fear is really self-preservation.
Okay.
And self-preservation always leads to defensive mechanisms, and it always leads to mediocrity. And so what I found is if you break through the wall and say, you know what, I've got to get past my own fear of what I'm afraid of losing or my fear of proving myself to you so that I can be real, that's when the influence and impact really occurs.
Interesting. Very interesting. So let's talk a little bit more about the leaving the influence on the table. How do you know when I've left my influence on the table? Especially because you're on the outside looking in. I guess you have the best view, right?
Well, first I have to know if you've ever given influence away.
Ah.
And if you've never given influence away, and I will just say I've found most people have really not felt what it feels like to truly impact someone else. Because most people are for themselves more than they're for others. And if you're for yourself, and it's not a bad thing, it's just the norm.
Right.
But when you're for yourself, you'll only go so far.
Okay.
You may have a good encounter with someone. Go, hey, great guy. Yeah, seems nice. But he's never really, I always feel.
It's always a little bit more esoteric. It doesn't go deep enough, right? You can tell.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, I was close, but it was like, it felt like a transaction.
Ah.
And when it feels like a transaction, then there's no chance for a relationship.
Yeah.
And relationship only happens when you're willing to go places to go, okay, Alvin, I'm here for you. I don't know a lot about your business Radio X. I don't know a lot about the global radio leader radio, but I want to serve it.
Exactly.
How can I help you?
Exactly.
What do you need? So for me, it's to get into your world to say, I'm for you, and I help you as much as I possibly can at this moment in time.
Okay.
That's when you see someone's willing to influence. But when I'm here going, okay, how much more time do we have? I got other things I got to get going. Then I'm really here for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that kind of connects to the relationship that that your bio really points toward, because your bio says that Giant is really a relationship company.
It's really it. I mean, if you look at the assets that we have, it's hard to do what we do. We've been doing events for years and years, and if you come to any of our events, and the comments that are made are, this is unbelievable, because it's like a Blue Man Group with a rock concert with leadership.
Wow.
And it's crazy, and it's just fun. And that's hard to do. Fun with a purpose. But a lot of people could pull it off if they figured out the formula. But what they couldn't figure out is the relationships that we have.
Yes.
And the reality is the glue that we have is how deep of relationships that we've built around the world. And that's what we were trying to do, because we're really getting to a place where, like, I really don't want anything. I'm here to serve you.
Right.
So when people figured out that we're really serving them with no ulterior motive, do we want you to host the site? Yes. Do we want you to buy a book or two? Absolutely.
Right.
But those are things there to help you.
Right.
Not just a schlock product. So anyway, I think when people figure out that it's more than a transaction, it's truly a relationship, and they're willing to do it, then we call those people of peace. And so we've been training our salespeople to look for people of peace on the sales on the phone, because if you're not willing to really people of influence, or if you're not really willing to be influenced or allow us to serve you, then we'd rather just go on to the next person. No offense.
Yes.
But
so do you find people of peace typically are connectors?
Totally. Okay. Totally. And we call them group leaders. And that's the external language, but we call them group leaders. And these group leaders are fanatic fans, not necessarily of like a brand, like American Idol fan or, you know, something like a U2 fan, but in a fan of appreciation. I was speaking at this conference in Vail this weekend, and a guy stood up and to everyone else, he said, "You guys don't know who you're talking to. This is Jeremy. He leads the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast. This is the greatest event of the year. You all need to be involved." And he was a raving fan because he gets it.
Yes.
And he understands how people can influence and use, leverage it. So I always tell people, use us, leverage us to impact others.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's the goal. What's hard, though, it's hard to build that when people, because everyone's used to transactions, and most people think that you want something all the time.
Exactly. And it becomes very foreign.
And they're kind of almost like, is this too good to be true?
Yeah. And it probably takes a few interactions to really understand it. Yep. Well, I got it pretty quickly. Back in January of last year, 2012, Tom Darrow and I put together the first of three events, and we had you over to actually be the keynote speaker for us that day.
Right.
I'm sure you remember it.
Yep,
we had a good time there. And one of the things we asked you was, can we videotape that event because we wanted to be able to use it to show to folks who actually couldn't make it. And your response, you didn't blink an eye. You just said, well, yeah, anything you need, just go ahead and do it. Just move forward. And most people, and we've had, let me say this, we've had speakers since then. We've asked the exact same question, and it came back with, no, that's not part of the contract.
Right.
So it was more transactional versus the transformational conversation we had with you.
Well, here's a phrase that I love to use, and to give yourself away. Now, if you give yourself away, or if you give your content or influence away, you'll get far more than you could ever imagine. It just happens. It just shows up differently.
Mm.
And I think most people have been burned, we've all been burned. I've been burned. You know, in the last few months, I've been burned. But it's not about that. It's like I'm trusting that my content would be better given than kept in.
Right. And the second piece of that, I would imagine, too, Jeremy, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is even if you don't give it away, that's no guarantee you won't get burned.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we're talking with Jeremy Kubitschek, the president and CEO of Giant Impact and the co-founder of the Giant Companies, an entrepreneur and a published author whose current book is a national bestseller. And that must sound pretty good, right?
Yeah, it feels good. But you know, it's funny. It lasts when you see your book in Barnes & Noble or you see your book on the charts or whatever. That feeling lasts about 30 minutes, really. when you write a book and you get it out there and it's kind of like, yeah, okay, I checked that one off my list. But here's what was really encouraging. The book is Leadership is Dead. It was the first book. They've renamed it because they thought it was too negative of a title. They renamed it Making Your Leadership Come Alive. It's the same concept, but
well, wasn't that the subtitle of the book?
Yeah.
Somehow?
But
okay.
But Simon & Schuster decided they wanted to change it. But what was so fun was to come up to this lady came up to me to have me sign the book, and she had marked all over it and circled it, and she just said, "I can't tell you how encouraging the book was," and that you know that's where it's like, yes, that feels good.
Somebody
more
got
so
it.
Than a chart or a. But when you see someone dog earing and circling and going, this is my story, and this helped me so much. And you know, those are the types of things. And so what I like to do is I like to challenge, but the books that I write are very, very encouraging. And when people read them, they're very practical too. And so I've just been writing about influence and relationships in the leadership vein. And most leadership books are the 7 habits of this or the 2 things you need to, you know. And those are things that are more tactical.
Exactly.
And what I found is leadership is all about people. And it's all about your social skills, your relational skills. It's all about your mindset and the way that you think. And most of the issues and the drama that happens is based on insecurity and based on leaning on your own thinking too much.
Interesting.
And so.
Interesting. So when we think about the giant company that you've been able to put together, what's the ideal client look like?
We have several, so it's hard to answer.
Take your time.
Yeah, well, the The ideal client, I will say this, the ideal client is someone willing to learn.
Okay.
I mean, somebody who really wants, who's gotten to the point of saying, okay, I've tried everything else. I've done the 20 of this and the steps and all these things, and that they want to get real,
mm-hmm.
and they're willing to know themselves and to lead themselves first. Because the problem in leadership, and what I hear over and over and over, the reason I write about leadership is dead, is that everyone who's worked for someone has had somebody say, you need to go to this conference, or here, read this book. And then they look and they go, but you haven't read it. So
right.
If you would do it first, then I'll do it.
There you go.
And if you'll show me that you can do it, and if I can see change in you, then I'll be willing to change myself.
Kind of an inside-out approach, right?
That's exactly. So we look for people who want to do something significant, want to do something a little bit different. So, mm-hmm. like for instance, Ford is a client of ours, and we've been able to serve Ford, and they're a great client, and they have a willingness to make changes because it started at the top with Alan Mulally.
Okay,
so they're willing to do things out of the box. So we created some programs for them that were not typical workshops and lectures. We created things that got people to experience things, and that experience led them to some amazing insights.
Hmm.
To a personal level, we have personal leaders who come to our retreat center in Suwanee, Georgia.
Okay.
So we have a retreat center that's all glass. And what we do is we basically take a day and we write their life on the glass, and we take their whole lifeline. It's unbelievable the impact that we're having in people's lives, and we find their self-preservation, and we look for their areas of influence or lack of influence, and we talk about their character and their competence and the influence model, and we basically help them build a intentional plan, an intentional life plan, intentional leadership, and it changes the way that they view who they are. So they start knowing themselves better.
Interesting.
And then we challenge them to lead themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that we do. And then other people are just people who want to gain a taste of it. They come to one of our events. So the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast, May 10th.
Mm-hmm.
An ideal client is someone who wants to bring 10 people to influence. So we'll have insurance agents who will bring their client base.
And it's fairly inexpensive. I remember this over the years, right?
It's $150 to $250, different price points.
Right.
But it's not very expensive for the experience you get and the learning that you get. And so those are the types of things that we do. So it's engaging in giantimpact.com or people who just want to get my content for free. It's on my blog.
Gotcha. Well, I just want to make sure that we certainly put you out front and center in making sure that Giant and Giant Impact and Giant Capital, et cetera, are all represented well, especially on our program. So, you know, we've talked a lot about leadership at this point, and, of course, our show is Global Leader Radio. So are you international as well?
Yeah, we are. We're in about 25 countries with our content or our simulcasts, and we've got partners and willing and wanting to grow that exponentially. But again, Kathy always says, to get bigger, you have to get better.
Mm.
And so we're in the process of getting better right now in certain areas.
Okay.
And we're so fired up for what that looks like, but we know that that's going to lead to just massive growth internationally. And so I'm spending a lot of time there, and we'll be spending a lot more time in the future.
Well, interesting. I tell you that I probably am a little bit remiss too, Jeremy. We've spent a lot of time talking about leadership, and I haven't hit the pause button until now, and we need to ask you, what is your definition of leadership?
Yeah, my definition specifically of leadership is basically it's someone who understands their intent and is willing to use their influence, which is power, to empower, not overpower.
Mm-hmm.
So leadership is influence, and influence is power.
Okay.
If you know your motive and your intent, truly, if it's for other people, you'll empower. If it's for yourself, you'll naturally overpower. And that overpowering will look like manipulation or coercion. So my definition of a good leader is someone who understands themselves and their intent, who's really for other people, and he or she works very hard to empower people. And that looks like serving them or liberating them. so that they can be the best that they can be.
So it's not just the cognition, it's also the behaviors, the outward.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So how would you compare and contrast the elements of building the giant brand with our listeners needing to build their personal brand?
Just
across the board, yeah, because the start of a new year, hitting the reset button.
Yeah.
You know, and if you kind of apply to some of the things that you've learned and have done with your companies.
Yeah. All right. So here's my view of it. One, you know, the tradition, right, the tendency right now is to do year-end New Year's resolutions and so on and so forth. And everyone rags on them saying they never don't last, you know. But John Gordon, who's a friend of mine, he's an author, and he's really challenged me this year. He said, you know, Jeremy, what if you looked at it as a picking one word? And he wrote a book called One Word on this, which is really good. He said, what would you think about using one word as your theme for the year? And it kind of made your year, so everything came from that filter. And so for me, what I do for the end of year is I typically do a couple things. One, I always write a lessons learned, and I take the 5 to 10 lessons I learned from the year. And I have a back page on my journal that mm-hmm. I write lessons learned, like never do this again, or gosh, you're an idiot. You know, that's kind of, and so I write those things out. But what I've done is now I've now collected since 2008, I've done 8, 9, 10, 11. So I've got 4 or 5 years of history of lessons learned. I added another year this year. And then what I do is I write, what do I want for 2013 and what do I not want for 2013?
Both sides of the prism.
Yep, and because I find that oftentimes what you don't want is easier than even what you want. And so it was really interesting to lay what I lessons learned, here's what I want, here's what I don't want, and then I parlayed all of that, and I created one word, which was the theme word for the year. So, and for me, the theme word came just like that. I was on an airplane, I was looking out, and I'm like, what's the word? What's the one word that kind of will drive my leadership for the year?
Hmm.
And so for me, I'll be personal, and I'll tell you my mine was I was going to make up some crazy like kemosabe. But my word was love. And it was interesting. I said, you know, I've always liked love, but I don't know if I've ever loved love. And so what I wanted to do was really understand what it looks like to love people really, really, really well. Because I want to go to another level in my leadership.
Well, that's truly a different level.
And so here's the phrase that a guy named Kevin Weaver gave me this quote, and I loved it. Love is always contending for the highest possible good in every situation and relentlessly contending until it's a present tense reality.
Interesting.
And so the always contending for the highest possible good in people, or always contending for the highest possible good in business or a situation, and it was like, okay, that's a different level of love. That's like, that's a great way to frame it. So I don't mean love like, you know, Valentine's and frou-frou. I mean like a deep, deep love. So that was my one word. So that's kind of my theme
mm-hmm.
for the year, and that's kind of the way that I brand or think about my year. So to an individual,
and that's both personal and professional. Sounds
absolutely,
like.
Yeah. And I don't separate.
Okay,
I'll just tell you.
Okay,
the PC, the political correct stuff that's going around most places, and it's rampant in corporations, is I think a lot. In most cases, it's over exaggerated because what happens is you cannot separate personal from professional.
Interesting.
It's just
because you're the same person. You're certainly the one that's consistent within both those
worlds. It's impossible. Okay. It's impossible. Meaning, if your wife calls you to say something about the air conditioning being broken,
mm-hmm.
do you think that's going to affect your day?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Will it affect your performance? Absolutely. If your child is sick, will that? If you have a physical ailment, you can't separate. It's just impossible. And then you add this little, you know, thing called the Apple iPhone, it's everywhere, right? So we all use it. We're all aware. We're texting and tweeting. And so information and little 140-character streams come in. You can't separate that.
Right.
So my view is, okay, embrace it. You don't just embrace it. It is the reality. The next generation specifically does not separate personal from professional. So if that's the case, then let's learn from them. Then how do they operate? How are they productive versus fighting those things? So for me, personal and professional go hand in hand. But.
So if we don't learn how to use that and integrate it in our lives, then we will not be able to communicate. And with the lack of communication, there will be no influence. So leadership will truly be dead.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I actually have found the next generation to be so much more transparent. The boomers are the ones who are the most guarded. Mm-hmm. The Xers are confused. The generation Y, the millennials, they're the ones who are you know very sensitive and very communicative. It's a really interesting season we're running into.
That sounds like a whole different conversation we need to have sometime too. I need to learn a little bit more about that. So obviously, in your books, you speak a lot about relationships, and so could you share something practical with us about relationships in the workplace?
Yeah, the way that we do relationships are very different. For me personally, in my role as founder, as being a CEO and as founder, has been that I have a lot of people, whether it's authors or speakers or clients or prospects or whatever, that that I'm interacting with and around. So one of the things that we decided, my family and I, my wife and I decided, is this was about 6-7 years ago, is let's not anyone who comes to Atlanta to be with us. I shouldn't say anyone, but the majority,
right,
would stay in our home instead of a hotel.
Wow.
So what happens is we have a little apartment in our basement. We've set it up that way so that it feels like a hotel. And people come and stay with us for several reasons. One, I get access to them more so, and they get access to me so that they get to see if I'm the real deal or not.
Right.
Two, my kids get to meet some of the most amazing people you could ever imagine. And they get to learn how to interact and communicate with adults. And three, I'm not gone every night at some dinner and missing my family.
Very important.
So what was great about it, and we had our the first year we moved here, we had 200 and something nights. I think it's been averaging like 150, 140 nights a year.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And most people would go, well, that's just too much. But for us, it's a part of our lifestyle. So we're okay with that. But even if you took 40, imagine 40 nights a year to have people, that what it does is it takes relationships to a whole
different
other
level.
And so that's one practical way that we do relationships.
Yeah, that is that's truly practical. When you sit down and think about that, it took me a minute to really let that register what that truly means. Because although it probably seems as simple as walking down the stairs and interacting with someone, or have someone walk up the stairs and interact with you, you're right. The guards have to come down. You have to be your authentic self when you're in pajamas, perhaps.
Absolutely.
And having those conversations. Yep. So the name of one of your books, obviously, is Leadership is Dead, and the other is Humble for President. And I realize that that subtitle to the book, which you just mentioned on Leadership is Dead, has now been changed to the real title of the book. So are there some situations where indeed leadership certainly comes alive? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the idea is if you have no influence in someone's life, most of the leaders that I've, most of the corporations and the leadership culture, you're forced to follow people because they're your boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Office TV show was made up simply because of bad bosses, really. But the whole idea is that leadership is influence, and influence can either come alive or it can die.
Hmm.
So if you have no influence on my life, Alvin, then I'm not going to follow you.
Right.
Then your leadership is irrelevant to me.
It is dead.
And it's dead.
Yeah.
However, if you are one that you're secure in yourself and you're humble and you're willing to empower and liberate and you're for me, then you have influence in my life. You can tell me things. I might not want to hear it, but I'll trust you.
Right.
Then your leadership's alive.
Hmm.
And what I found that in the title of leadership, the majority of leaders are dead in the world.
Yeah.
And so because they have no influence, or influence is dried up, they have autocratic power, but that power is not influence.
Yeah. And actually, the topic of leadership, to your point, really is almost like skin, because everybody has it, but people treat it differently.
Absolutely.
Right. Yep. And so another thing I've noticed is that your particular title as you pointed out before, seemed a little controversial. Do you have any problem confronting? Apparently not.
I'm an encourager. So I would say I'm a constructionist, not a deconstructionist.
Okay.
So a constructionist, the way that they challenge is they use a 2x4, but they put velvet around it. So, and there's times that leaders, all of us, need a good just wallop across the head just to wake us up. Yeah. And, you know, and quite frankly, I did. I had a big wallop this year from a dear friend, and I needed it. And had a dear friend who basically said to me this year, "Jeremy, you're always defensive to me. Every time we talk, you're defensive, and you're trying to prove yourself, and that's what you write about." And it was just like a whop right across the head. I'm like, "You're absolutely right, because I'm, you know." So for me, I'm okay to challenge people, because it takes that sometimes to get people out of their habits and out of the rut of mediocrity. But when I write, typically the feeling you'll feel is inspiration and encouragement. Hmm. You'll get to a point where you're like, "Ouch, that's me."
Right.
But it will always end with a warm fuzzy in the end.
Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, the relationships and how you have brought people into your home for, you know, 40 days, et cetera, on up, is that there's a little bit of difference in the way you approach things than I would imagine most people do, especially with regard to that.
Sure.
And so you do juggle a lot of different roles. I mean, you're a husband, you're a son, you're a parent, you're an entrepreneur, you're a community servant. And so you're obviously a leader. Did I miss anything?
No.
So given that this is the dawn of a new year, and a lot of people want to be able to get things off on the right foot again, mm-hmm. what tips can you provide to our listeners on how to make all of these, the juggling of these roles, work in our lives? How do you find that balance?
All right. So now, again, I may be a little bit more controversial here in this one. I don't actually believe in balance.
Okay.
I don't think you really can be balanced.
Okay.
Okay. So here's where I tend to go now, and I'm going to get personal here, so you can edit this out or delete it or whatever if you need to. I know it's live.
No, you go for it.
For me personally, and I will say this personally, because my accident really affected this. That it changed my perspective. I believe if you're abnormally imbalanced on something, mm-hmm. on principles, or in those principles can be whatever. Mm-hmm. For me, it's on God. If right. I can be abnormally imbalanced on God, or I would say from a faith perspective, what's happened to me is then I become more secure in who I am, and I become worried less about other things. So then those other areas take care of themselves.
Right.
So the principles have become more important than they were in earlier stages of life. So for me, I'm abnormally imbalanced in one area, helps me balance the other areas.
Hmm.
But if I try to balance everything that says, okay, I've got 5 hours, I'm going to spend 1 hour doing this, 1 hour doing this, 1 hour doing this, I've got 5 hours, and they all don't have the same equal weighting.
Got it.
So it's the same. Think of it as parenting. I have 3 kids. Which child is more important? Right?
Yeah. I've got 3 daughters as well, so I got to be careful how I answer this.
They're all important.
No, they're
right?
all important.
Right. They're all important. So now, can I be balanced with every one of them? Absolutely not.
No.
One of them has a different schedule. One of them's a different stage. One of them different. So what you do is you focus. For me, I focus on my relationship with my wife.
Right.
Now, my wife that's the most important relationship that they can see. Outside of faith, that if they can see that I am really committed to my wife, that's the best training I can give my kids.
They can use that as the model.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm more focused on my wife than I am my kids, and that's benefiting my kids.
Right, right. So. Makes sense. Okay. So when you think about leadership and you think about learning, so how important is it for employees, colleagues, and leadership to be lifelong learners across the board?
This is a difficult one. It's very important. The short answer is it's very, very important. What does it mean to be a learner? And it's the stage of life for learning. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I've got some certain employees, and they're in their 20s and their 30s, and there's certain things I want to tell them, and I look at their life and go, "Oh, you need to learn this now," but they're not ready. So, how do you prepare yourself to be ready? is a question. Mm. So I found that there's certain people who are just learners and certain people who are just consumers. They're just beers. They're
right.
Just live. They don't know what learning looks like. And so I'm really not sure. This would be interesting for you and at Kennesaw State and all you guys do. This would be a great exercise for some of your young students to do a research project. Can people become learners or are they learners?
Interesting.
That's an interesting, because I'm not sure. I'm naturally curious, okay? So my curiosity drives me to go
and
see
dig
things,
deeper.
Dig deeper.
Okay.
Ask questions. I want to know. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. That goes to learning. I have other friends. I've got one friend who will read 3 or 4 books a week and skim read.
And
you know, I'll read a couple a month, but he'll read 3 or 4 a week. And I'm like, you're a voracious learner, but are you applying that? I don't know. You know, it's like almost too much input. But then the majority of people I know are just ambivalent. They're just living.
Interesting.
And I I'm not sure. Yes, it's important, but it's really important for people to be ready for what they learn.
Yeah, and be able to apply it, which is the second thing you mentioned as well. So one more thing on the book. Now, the second one is Humble for President.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, this was a so as I was writing Leadership is Dead, I started looking at humility. And in fact, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but I had some influence on humility. And so in the process, I started realizing that how much when you start studying humility, you realize how much pride you have.
And you see those as opposite ends of the same spectrum, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And,
okay.
And basically, I see pride as insecurity.
Okay.
And I see humility as security.
Got it.
And so I started doing some research on this and started realizing that we have a humility problem in this country. And humility is not just modesty. You know, humility is a strength.
Right.
And the best leaders I've ever worked for or known were the most secure leaders, and they were the most confident, and they were the most humble.
Hmm.
And so I started putting that together to go, what would it look like if we had our presidents that we elect? And then I started thinking, what if every president in the United States, every single president or CEO of every organization could commit to being a humble leader, which basically means that they deal with their insecurity.
Hmm.
If they could commit to being that type of leader, how would that affect our culture and how would it affect our nation? Because we're trying to change the leadership culture of this country from pride-based leadership to humility-based leadership. And to do that, we've got to get real.
Right.
And so we started writing on that. And this is a self-published book, and we started doing humble lessons from history. We started looking at Lyndon Johnson. We wrote a letter to our next president.
Wow.
And which is obviously Obama, but it could be any president.
Got it.
But it's not a political book. It's not meant to be anti-Obama, pro-Obama, anything like that. It's simply a book that's saying, if a president could lead like this, here's what it would look like.
Yeah, if this office led in this way.
If the president of your organization led this way, here's what it would look like. And so we started writing principles of humility. And so a lot of people have enjoyed it. You can go to humbleforpresident.com and sign up and be a part of the campaign, which, it's not political. It's just using the political system.
But it is a vote, right?
It is a vote. It is a vote. But we talk about things like humble presidents forgive, humble leaders pull, not push their team members. Humble presidents pursue causes greater than themselves, and we talk about the fact that that humility helps the cause, not just applause,
right,
for themselves. So it's a really practical, helpful book on what humility is.
So can you say that one again? The leader helps the cause, not just...
It helps promote a cause, not looks for applause.
Got it, not looks for applause. Interesting. So in the kind of the research that you've done between both of those books, and I remember hearing you say something about Lyndon Johnson and looking at some of his leadership styles or characteristics, in what ways are female leaders different than male leaders, if there's any differences?
Well, female leaders, there's natural, I think everyone, hopefully, and again, this is a politically correct world, would see that there are differences between male and female. typically, men get the, we get all the jokes that we're idiots, And women get all the jokes that they're nags or, you know, controlling or whatever. And the reality is it's not true.
Right.
The reality is that women,
correct,
but women bring an amazing different vocabulary, a different style of work, a different level of thinking. So it's an amazing part of it. What's interesting is if I said what are the insecurities of men and what are the insecurities of women, and it's really interesting.
Hmm.
We do, like I mentioned, we have these leaders that come to these retreats,
right?
And we've had almost close to 100 people go through this program that we have called the Leader Track, and in the process, we ask them three questions: what are you trying to prove?
Hmm.
What are you afraid of losing? And what are you trying to hide?
Hmm.
Almost to the T, it's amazing the percentages of men who are still trying to prove themselves to either their dads, who are most of them no longer living,
mm-hmm,
or to a comment made in college or in their early 20s that somebody made to them, and they're still trying to prove themselves to that comment or their first job. Could have been made by a boss or what have you.
Hmm.
Females, on the other hand, are trying to prove the glass ceiling or the respect that they deserve to be in the position. Most of the people we deal with are executives.
Right.
So they're trying to prove that they should be at the table with men.
Right. Okay.
So that insecurity is a fear,
mm-hmm,
and that fear has a motivation and a driver.
Okay.
And in both cases, so I wish for men and women to get through all their insecurity to say, listen, I'm just not very good. You know, this year, for instance, I had an epiphany, and my team knew this years ago, but I learned it, that I'm not a very good managing leader. I'm a very good visionary leader.
Okay.
But I'm not a managing leader.
You mean tactical nuts and
bolts? Tactical, day-to-day.
Day-to-day, okay.
Setting meetings, consistent follow-up. That's just not me. That's not who. So to go, you know what? I'm really, admit it on radio, I'm really not very good at managing. A managing leader, I've had people work for me that are phenomenal. Now, they weren't very good at strategy and vision.
Right.
So that's where I excel.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to get to a place. So if people can get to the same place and say, you know, I'm just not very good at
it. You just admit it, right?
Admit it.
Okay.
And most people are afraid because they think that's a weakness. And they're trying to have these badges of honor to say, I'm these great this and that, so I hide all my weaknesses. The problem is we all know what your weaknesses are. Everyone does. And the sooner we recognize them, then that fear or that weakness has less power over you.
Yeah.
And I can say, absolutely. I just transitioned from the CEO to founder,
mm-hmm,
in the last few months.
Okay.
And the reason I did that was simply because of the epiphany of I'm just not the day-to-day guy. So let's bring in the team and raise them up to do that.
Right.
And they're better at it anyway. And let me go be the ambassador. Let me go be the speaker and the writer and the
and do what you do
best. Do what I do best.
And do what the company really needs.
Absolutely.
And that no one else can do.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So the three things you said, what are you trying to prove? What are you trying to hide was third, and I don't remember the second.
And what are you afraid of losing?
Afraid of losing.
And again, self-preservation is natural. So no one wants to lose their family. No one wants to lose their 401k or their house, okay? What it is, it's the over-fixation or the over-protection of the things you're afraid of losing.
Okay.
So when you are afraid of losing your job or a salary or a commission, and you overprotect it by manipulating the system or telling someone else, oh, did you hear about Bob? I can't believe he did this. Or everyone else smells it,
yeah,
and they see it, and you know what happens? You tend to lose quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
So the faster you self-preserve, the quicker you lose.
Interesting. Interesting how that's on a different spectrum and how you've actually been able to identify that. How long did it take you to get to the point where you...
Until I realized that was me. well, I was living that way. And
got
so
it.
Part of my 10 years of figuring what I was like and where I was heading was figuring out my self-preservation, that I was actually afraid. I was an early bloomer.
Mm.
So I was 21 doing these things that no one should be doing when they're 21. I was 26 when I became vice president of a $40 million company. I was 28 when I became vice president and president-elect of a $500 million company. And all my peers were in their 50s.
Wow.
So what was I trying to do?
Yeah, trying to prove you were there.
I was trying to prove that I should be there.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I do? I name-dropped. I over-communicated, I was aggressive, I was ambitious, I was using all these things, which were nothing more than insecurity, and they were nothing more to self-preservation to continue to prove that I should be at that table. And once I finally realized that about myself, and it kind of like, I kind of laughed it off going, are you kidding me? Fast Company was my goal? Seriously? I mean, that's just a magazine that it's about envy.
Yeah.
You look at the magazine and want to be that person instead of being who you are. And so for me, I just got to the place where I'm like, no, what I want to do and what I want to be about is I want to serve influencers. I want to give myself away for people who are giving themselves away. Because if I can be that guy, that person, which is typically behind the scenes in a lot of cases because the other person's getting the spotlight.
Right.
But I know that, for instance, Alvin, you're doing some great things. If I can serve you in any way and help you in any way, outstanding. Now we're friends. We have a relationship. We have the same DNA and same desire, because the change that needs to happen in our culture won't happen by one person with some great book or one person who's branding themselves to be some guru. Because the guru stage is kind of dead because of the internet and because of everyone else getting into space. We need thousands of leaders who are willing to lead themselves first before they lead other people. When they lead other people, they'll have influence. When they have influence, their leadership's alive. That's what we're trying to accomplish.
And that's the essence of it all, right?
Yes.
So I actually had a question here that says, why do you do what you do? But I think in hearing the last 45 minutes to an hour or so, I think you pretty much capsulized it. But if you had to put it in a sentence or two, what would it sound like?
You know, I've gotten to the place where, well, you could say it could even be selfish. I do what I do because it feels great. when you know that you're a part of impacting and being memorable in someone else's life, and you're a part of an epiphany in someone else's life, there's nothing better. It's a great thing. So I've just chosen this lifestyle of this, and so why do I do what I do? My motivation is really one. I would tell you I do things because I have the space to be creative.
Okay.
And I'm a creative innovator. Second is I'm strategic. So I always am thinking about the future, which sometimes negatively affects relationships. But why I do what I do is because at the end of the day, I've realized maybe on my deathbed that the only things that were important were relationships.
Which are the things that you focused on.
That's right.
And you made sure you got done. And plus, you've been given an extraordinary gift that you're making the most of. Based on what I've seen in the last, well, actually, it's a year since I've known you.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty impressive. So please brag about the members of Team Giant. Can you tell us a little bit about who they are and the role they play in the firm?
Yeah. Well, we have an interesting group because we have a number of former CEOs that work for us. David Woods is one of our partners, and he leads Giant Partners. Patty Moore, who's the chairman of Red Robin. David was
the restaurant.
Yeah. David was the former CEO of Ditch Witch. We have a lot of different leaders that work inside our businesses who have a desire to influence. And so the way that we hire real quickly is we use DNA, DNA, skeleton, skin. Huh. So the DNA is the mission of who we are. And so we only work with people who have that missional heartbeat. So one guy, Chris Ettinger, who's kind of been a chief of staff at Giant Impact and is amazing. He lives and breathes Giant. He gets it. He understands what our mission is, what we're trying to accomplish, and it just oozes out of him, and everyone sees it, and he's for other people, and he's a great example. We've got a team lead, Chad Johnson, who leads up our Catalyst Concierge. He's so encouraging, and he's so willing to impact and influence people. That when people, I mean, they would take a bullet for this guy.
Wow.
You know, he's that type of guy. We've got leaders in all types of different roles who are using the character and competence to influence people. So they have the DNA. The skeletal structure is the way that we work.
Okay.
So
the process,
meaning we're a for-profit company. We work really hard. You know, so if you're coming from a not-for-profit business who's not used to our style, you won't really fit very well.
Understood.
The skin doesn't really matter once you've figured out the DNA and the skeletal structure. And that's where most leaders have a mishap in hiring. And the issue is that they look for skin first, just like
Guys, your skin is a metaphor.
Just how does their resume look?
Got it.
Oh,
got
they used
it.
To work
okay,
at Coke.
Got it.
Oh, okay. They worked at Home Depot or what? So they look at their skin. Then they look at their skeletal structure and go, well, they seem to have gotten their MBA. Then they hire them and they go, oh, my goodness, they don't believe in our mission. They're not. They're just for themselves. It's just like, why do we have the divorce rate that we have? We have adults or we have people who are getting married who they look and go, well, she's really attractive. She's really hot. Skin.
That's right.
Then they go, and her dad has money or she's going to be a lawyer. And then they get married and they go, you mean you don't spank your kids or you don't believe in God? And then they divorce and they go, irreconcilable differences.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do their homework.
Yeah.
So we just say, start with DNA. Then get to the skeletal, then you get the skin.
What a great framework. I haven't thought of it, obviously, in that way. And that's why we have you here, so that intellectually curious people like me and the millions or so people that are listening on our broadcast and will be downloading the podcast can get the chance to learn from you. So we greatly appreciate that. So now my final question for you, Jeremy. We're going to make your answer to this question available on our web posting. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Yeah, I would say in the last 5 years, which is no surprise, it's the book Humility, written by a dead guy, which most good books are from dead guys, Andrew Murray. And Andrew Murray was a Scottish teacher and speaker, and he wrote this book called Humility, and it's changed the way that I look and view leadership.
Wow. So, Jeremy, I got to tell you, on behalf of our learning community, we've obviously learned quite a bit from you today and gotten a few great frameworks to start our year off with, so we certainly appreciate you accepting our invitation today. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometime. If time permits, we can get our schedules synced up. Would that be a deal?
Sure. Fantastic. Well, thank you, Alvin.
Well, good. Well, with that in mind, could you tell us and our learning community how we can contact you either by phone and or by email?
Yeah, the best way to do that, if you'll go to jeremykubicek.com, so it's jeremykubicek.com, and I have it's a blog, but I have all information. I have forums and chats, and that's where all the communication happens, and it's free, and it's just a way that people stay in touch, and I continue to encourage people with content like we're talking about.
And you've got a great, thriving website. I had a chance to visit on a number of occasions, so it's pretty good. So with that response, we'll bring this week's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. So we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. And also a special congratulations goes out to one of my good friends, Mike Lassiter with AT&T. Today is his 39th anniversary of the day he began back in 1974 down in Florida. So congratulations, Mike Lassiter. And for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect with us and sign up for an information session. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.